Bailey takes on Bergman, gets away from him. Danger time for Port Adelaide. This guy is magnificent. Fletcher towards Danaher, playing in front.
Rayner Dunkley back to Rayner. Rayner from 55. Is this the perfect response? Bang!
Rayner breaks one tackle, uses his left. He's strong, he's bold, he's brilliant. Out the back, Sorko off a step. He only needs one step. Another clearance for Brisbane. McCarthy trying to get busy. Here's Charlie again. Cue that song back up. Hipwood bursting towards goal. This will hurt Port Adelaide. He doesn't know what to do. He's told to play on by the up. Just go on and kick it, Eric. And he does with a sheepish grin. Lions fresh on the ground says, I've been waiting all night for this.
The Brisbane Lions fancast is back, and what a huge weekend of football, as everyone's mate Darcy Wilmot so eloquently put it.
Oi, what are we doing? What are we doing in 2 weeks? Prelim, baby! Woo!
Prelim, baby, woo. Oh, yes, a huge win against Port Adelaide. It is JB and Patrick to have a look at week one of the finals, which sees not just the AFL men's, but the women's and the VFL team all claiming some pretty big victories. So let's get amongst it and have a look at one of the greater games at the Gabba, where Country Road was absolutely blaring. What an atmosphere that moment was. I know. And look, I'm starting to, especially in finals, agree with you. The songs after the goals can be a little bit tacky and cringy, but those two Charlie Cameron goals back-to-back where the whole crowd was singing Country Road was a pretty nice little atmosphere, to be fair.
Yeah, probably. I reckon, yeah. Like, I mean, they'd probably do it anyway now, the fans.
Well, I mean, a lot of people feel the same about the songs after goals, and like I said, the finals is, yeah, one thing I am glad is that we've stopped playing songs after the opposition kicks a goal, so that's one step in the right direction. But those two goals in the third quarter back to back where the crowd had barely stopped singing Country Roads for the first time before it gets queued up again, just magic stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's sort of, it's good, but I guess it would still also be pretty bloody electric. I think if you remember the Bulldogs percentage battle, yep, game against West Coast, where, like, you know, the celebration from the Link McCarthy point to the Charlie Cameron goal was sort of just like a similarly high decibel consistency. Well, man, you've really got me starting on a negative point of view. I have to redo this, you jerk.
All right, look, let's go back to the game, shall we? As we forecast, JL comes out of the starting side. In comes our mate Lincoln McCarthy. And JL gets relegated to sub. So it was sort of a toss-up between JL and Darcy Fort. And I thought, for all money, week one of finals, Fags was going to employ that insurance policy and Darcy Fort would be the sub. But no, JL it is. And no sooner had he gone on that he kicked a goal in about the first 5 seconds. But we'll get to that. Very nervy start to the game from both teams, really.
Yeah, it was a bit of a weird one. Like, the first quarter was pretty frustrating affair in a general sense. Like, I don't know if it translated as well at the game, but the umpires just seemed to be like absolutely like really trying to coax in the old Port Adelaide team. We had just a bit of class that really made the difference in that first quarter. The three goals were like pretty great. Rayner, Bailey to kind of fire start everything, and Fletcher, come to him. Yeah, it was just like that little bit of class, that little bit of polish in like the last sort of inside 50 point. Just, it was signs of things to come, but man, like, Port Adelaide were given an opportunity. Like, I understand listening on like the footy show and stuff, like Kane Corn saying like, oh, they missed the shots and stuff, but man, like, I went back and had a look at it, and I've given them 5 of their misses and 4 of their goals from very dubious decisions up until about three quarter time. So make of that what you will.
Yeah, the
maybe that's one-eyedness, but like, they were getting like, the free kicks ended up being relatively even. They had about a +3 differential for the back half of the whole game, but like, they were getting them inside 50 set shots for goal, and the Dwayne Russell footy gods were really, really helping us out, because they did not deserve to get a lot of those shots of goal, particularly when you've got like guys like Sam Powell-Pepper just like gut punching Starcevic and then getting a free kick immediately after for like the lightest hole. It's just like, you don't deserve to get those goals. So I don't have a lot of sympathy for the errant goal kicking of Port Adelaide, and they got what they deserved.
Yeah, you're not wrong there. The frustration at the umpires was very palpable at ground level. I mean, as you said, not only did Port get those dubious free kicks in their forward 50, like, I don't know what more Charlie Cameron had to do to get a holding free kick in our forward 50. It was very reminiscent of back in the day, Dylan Grimes just doing whatever he liked with Charlie Cameron to no avail. As you said, yeah, it did even out in the back half, and we sort of got on the nicer end of some 50-50 calls. But by that time, the game was done and dusted, and we'd already, like, flexed our muscles and got the win.
So. Thank goodness as well for that, I got to say. Thank goodness. Because, I don't know, Port Adelaide, just a bit of sneaky kind of sneaky tactics. You mentioned the Ryan Burton on Charlie Cameron, but, like, Willie Rioli, man, he slides into tackles, into the guy's heads with his knees, like, just about every time. It's the third man in, and he got pinged once. But it's just like, it happened twice and I was like, oh, that's really bad. Like, you don't want a knee slide into a dude's head when he's on the ground. So that irked me. I want to get rid of all of this, like, umpire-y negative stuff just so we can talk about, like, the awesome stuff. Yeah, all those goals, screw them. Lysette was holding Oscar, like, through the back of his jumper, like, every marking contest. So whatever, didn't get... We got one ruck infringement in the first one. And then none else forever. And yeah, it was interesting to hear on commentary that Jason Horne Francis was described early on in the game as what a revelation he's been.
Sure.
The most obvious number one draft pick revelation I've ever heard of. But fair enough, you can have that one. So on to the good things.
On to the good things. There was another number one pick out there that actually made a huge difference in the game in Cam Rayner, wasn't there?
He really lifted. I think it was really, really almost like symbolic of, like, him and particularly McCluggage as well, just being like, all right, now's our time. Like, we're not young finals players. Like, we've got to show what we can do at this level. And the two of them, they led the way for the team. And it's, like, so refreshing to see players like that do that. And I've spoken earlier on in the year about how, like, that kind of middling group haven't quite stepped up into being, like, true leaders of the team. And that, to me, was as good as any indication that they were ready for that.
Well, the whole narrative, and it started with Fags with his appearance on the couch. Like, he was very... It's not the Fags we're used to seeing. You know, we've been, throughout the years, even this year, saying, oh, you know, we don't talk about top two. We just want to finish as high as we can. It's all about top four and getting that second chance. We're not talking about the MCG. Like, we're just sort of, but... Like, his interview on the couch, he fully agreed and embraced, like, this is our time. This is our chance to do it. We're never going to get a better shot. So let's go and make the most of it. As you said, those players you mentioned, they're sort of 3-4 years into finals now. All the players spoke about how they've spoken about the last sort of four final series and the failures and the learnings from it and what we can do moving forward to make the most of this chance. So it looks like they've had a bit of an audit on the last few final series, the one that's left us disappointed again and again, and said, you know what, no more. And I bloody hope, should we make it to the MCG, that they have that conversation about the MCG as well, because it has to be had.
Yeah, well, I think it was interesting, like, you and I haven't spoken about the Fagan on the couch interview, but I think between that, probably since the Collingwood game where he wore that gigantic beanie, which is hilarious, but, you know, great cause, since then we've kind of seen him be himself for the first time in the season. I think it, like, and the article that came out during the week, just about how much he'd struggled with, like, the Hawthorne stuff throughout the year and things like that. Like, we were seeing a very frosty, very reserved, very you know, Chris Fagan was basically the media darling for, like, you know, ever.
Yeah.
You know, the way they treat sort of Craig McRae and how, like, jovial and how, like, fun he is with the media and stuff like that. That's what Fagan was the entire time up until this year, when he just was like, obviously, like, nah, I can't put myself out there because I've been absolutely, like, burned by this this allegation thing.
Interesting.
By the way, my theory about him not being on 360 with Mark Robinson still goes.
Well, so yeah, still up there. They had every other finals coach in the lead up to the finals or in the last 2 weeks on 360, everyone bar Fags, who went on the couch instead. So, yeah, Mark Robinson's obviously done him dirty, and it's going to be, you know, I think at some point next year, like, he'll have contractual obligations to appear on 360. but he's only been on there maybe once this year, maybe twice at most. So yeah.
Yeah, I think he was on there twice, and the second time Mark Robinson
didn't say a word.
Wasn't allowed in, yeah. in inverted commas to, like, you know, Jared Waitley had his arm up the whole time, and they weren't like that was only a little insight that they didn't mean to cut to. So I thought he got more of a chance to kind of, you know, he obviously gets along well with Brownie and stuff like that. But yeah, I think it'd be good to know or interesting to hear whether that the audit on the team was kind of player driven or whether it was coaching driven, because it really could be either, and neither one would surprise me. And that's not to say that whichever one didn't kind of broker the situation, kind of much like the Daniel Rich Gunston, did they drop themselves? Were they dropped? It doesn't really matter. The result is the important thing. So yeah, curious about that. And it might never come out.
It might never come out unless, you know, how the last couple, and I mean, looking forward with a glass half full here, every year over the last sort of maybe 4 years, the Premier gets a little sort of half an hour to an hour doco on Fox 40. So maybe we'll get a bit of an insight should that happen. But, you know, there's a lot of water to go under the bridge before we even start thinking about that sort of stuff.
Line up the documentary, get us on as cameo. Oh God. So anyway, that's a very long and ambled way of talking about the first quarter. So we led, it wasn't comfortable in the first quarter. And I think we were deadly efficient in the first half with our inside 50s. So yeah, it really was an arm wrestle. It was a good game. It was two good teams. Port's midfield were able to kind of run out of stoppage more so and kind of impact the game in the first half. How was it at the ground? Like, did it seem like, I don't know, it kind of felt like if they got that one break that they were kind of in for a score. Did it feel that way at the game?
Yeah, it did. No one was relaxed until maybe that third quarter where we put on 8 goals and sort of got ourselves a bit of a lead. And even then, it wasn't until maybe we put on a few more in the last quarter and it blew out to about sort of 40 or 50 points where we're like, all right, now we can sort of unclench a little bit. But you always felt Port Adelaide was only, especially with the way the umpiring was going, they were only 2-3 minutes away from really, you know, opening us up and stuff going our way. Like, yeah, some poor shots on goal, especially from Todd Marshall, who's usually fairly reliable. You just think at halftime, man, if he learns to kick, like, we you know, this could be a different story. And then 20 seconds into the third quarter, Willie Rioli puts through that goal and you're like, ah, here we go. But then it wasn't long before. And that's the sort of thing that has really impressed me about Brisbane over the last month, probably since that Melbourne game. And we're just not talking about that Gold Coast game at all, is, you know,
See, that's a statistical anomaly.
In previous years, when teams have come at us and put on a good run, we have sort of rolled over a little bit and let it happen. But, you know, over the last month, teams have had their momentum and we've been able to answer back sort of more or less straight away. And we really did that against Port Adelaide. I mean, they got in front in the second quarter thanks to a Marshall goal. And like, oh no, you know, we've seen this episode before. What's going to happen? Is it going to be the Brisbane we've seen over the last couple of weeks and we're going to be able to answer the questions and re-wrestle the momentum going our way? Or are we going to roll over and let it happen again? So,
well, I'll just correct you there. It was a Rosie goal, which I think is more important for their momentum. And it was more worrying that they got ahead on the back of a Rosie goal. Because he sort of just ghosted out of stoppage or, you know, out of contest at the 50-meter arc. And, you know, Zach Bailey kind of lost him a little bit and he just unleashed. Like, Rosie's an interesting player because I've been kind of critical of him and his contest work and his sort of toughness in at the ball and his two-way running. And I think, like, the best and worst of Connor Rosie was all sort of on show in the game. He's so damaging, like, going forward. A bit like Zach Bailey a little bit, probably a bit more consistent. But, you know, his lack of two-way run, and same with Horn Francis, their lack of two-way run really allowed us to just get on top. And when the game was in the clinches, they went pretty quiet, their midfield did. And, you know, that was something that could have happened because there was a lot of expectation on them and the season that they'd had. And I think sometimes we can forget that, like, you know, other teams can panic too. Like, the games across the weekend, there was a lot of uncertainty amongst players that ordinarily wouldn't have it. So, yeah, Rosie kicked them ahead and then you know, we talked earlier on, but Cam Rayner and Hugh McCluggage fired back with goals to settle us, and then we had one from the great Zorko. So it was pretty interesting. Like, he had such a microcosm Zorko game.
Yep. Yeah, we got the full Dane Zorko experience there. The complete piece of shit Dane Zorko, and you know, the good side of him as well. He putting through that goal. He was hitting some nice little targets with his kicks as well. So yeah, we got a bit of everything there. I mean, it's been revealed now actually that Zach Butters got cited twice for various instances, but just a fine in amongst all that. I don't think. Nothing doing.
Like some of the suspensions we've seen, and you know, we've had a fine, we've had a one, a two, and a three plus week, and you know, we'll go into that a little bit later on. But yeah, you know, as much as I don't like the image or the, you know, running through the back of a guy or even putting a bit of body, like, you know, I'd argue that's as sort of flaccid as the Sam Pelpepper one on Stasevich, which is just like, just pay a free kick if you see it and move on.
Get in touch anytime. Shoot us an email at blfancast@gmail.com or join the Discord.
Yeah, Zorko was interesting because he dipped a little bit in the second quarter, and that was when Port got on top. So he was really sort of symptomatic of where the team were at in the vast majority of the game. And then, yeah, as you said, Willy Rioli got a goal within about 10 seconds of the third quarter, and you're like, oh. And then it was Jasper and then the two Charlie Cameron goals to make that moment that you described earlier on. And even then, it sort of went a bit goal for goal. And, you know, as we do from time to time, we just break it open in such a small passage of play. The Eric Hipwood goal was hilarious.
Oh, my God. What was he doing?
Well, okay. So I think I've understood what had happened. So I reckon he's taken the mark, thought to play on, looked over at the bench and seen the 32nd board, panicked.
Took a few more steps.
Then been told to play on and then kick the goal because, like, and thank goodness he did because we kicked another goal.
Yeah.
Like, that's the hilariosity of it is, like, any other normal person is just taking the mark, going back, set shot, kicking the goal, and then it's three-quarter time. Whereas this bungling moron is just like, oh no, what, the 32nd board? And he's done it perfectly to enable us enough time to get another goal. So, well done, Eric Hipwood. And that little shit-eating grin was everything that you wanted.
Speaking of that bungling moron who perhaps had, maybe not moment of the game, but to see a key forward sprint down the wing and not take down Xavier Duursma, but, you know, get body contact down on him, put enough pressure on to turn over the kick where Ollie Lord was out the back and potentially another Port Adelaide goal. But to see that from your key forward, amazing. Absolutely amazing.
He looked like a Labrador that had been like let out in a field for the first time.
Yeah.
I guess it's funny because, you know, the rhetoric around this whole season, and, you know, you and I have been a little bit guilty of it as well, as sort of like, you know, can we trust our key forwards and stuff? No other key forward in the competition can or is doing that.
No, you're right.
And, like, so I guess if I could talk to myself at the beginning of this season, you sort of say, like, focus on what you've got rather than what you wish you had. And, I mean, Joe Danaher was as consistent as anything. Like, as far as key forwards in the first week of the final, he knocked it out of the park, you know. Looking at some of the other key forwards, like, what the hell did Tom McDonald do? Amble around like a guy that looks like he's just played VFL. You know, McStay and Majacek were contested, but there. Kerno kicked one goal. Mackay kicked minus two goals and got concussed in possibly one of the funniest and worst finals performances I've ever seen since Leon Davis. And who else is there? Like, you know, yeah, Joe Dan, I think, needed to stand up.
And did.
And that's another one. That's another one you probably put in there with, like, Rayner and McCluggage of, like, you know, they probably needed to show because Danaher hasn't been particularly great in any of his finals for the Lions, so.
Well, there's one. Five goals, one. That last one he kicked as well, the contested mark on the boundary against, I think it was Bergman by that stage, you know, opposite side, and just flushed it, drop punt on the left boundary line, and just, you know, any other player, You know, see Tom Papley, who kicks a goal from 3 metres out and carries on like he's just saved the world from the Nazis. And Joe Danaher kicks a brilliant goal on an angle. And I don't know. It's like, oh, yeah, just put my shoes on.
Yeah, the postman. He's delivering letters as he thinks he was. I mean, the game sort of, I don't know, like, watch the last quarter, watch the last half again, like, to experience it. Like, I can't provide the range of emotions that was going on at the time. It was as much relief as anything because I think, as you said, it was very tense. But, yeah, like, Fletcher kicked another and then we had the JL. Like, the two little quickfire punch goals, there's three groups of them. There's the two Cameron ones. There's the Hipwood and Danaher one before three-quarter time and then the Fletcher and JL goal. Love the shade thrown by Hodgie. I've never seen him run that fast before in the celebration. Sam Palpepper got a couple back, you know, whatever.
It was too late. The damage was done.
Yeah, I mean, I'm more impressed and amazed. How is he 25 years old?
Sam Palpepper.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that tracks.
Yeah, I know it tracks because I think he was the same draft year as Pluggage and Berry. But, man, that guy, he just looks like he's about 503 years old. Like, I had, like, a former, well, not a housemate, but a guy that lived in, like, an upstairs bit of a house, and he looked basically the same, more emaciated for various reasons. But, like, yeah, goodness me, it's an old 25, I can tell you that. And I'm not looking forward to watching him run through packs for the next 7 years, so... Good to see Danaher, as you said, kick that last goal and at least end the game on our terms. It would have been great for Charlie to get the last kick in his two-hundy, but yeah, no, you can't have everything.
No, but we basically got as much of everything as we possibly could have got, and more importantly, no injuries. I was a bit worried where Cam Rayner came off the end with a bit of a hobble and immediately got the calf rubbed down, but according to it was just a corky and some cramps, so he should be all right.
Yeah, so he got cleaned up by Lyset.
Yeah.
In one of the old, I don't know, this is a weird one because, like, I remember early on in the season, Dane Zorko doing a similar thing where he sort of body checks someone after a handball and they're like, oh, that should be a free kick in 50 meters. And I was like, what, was that a rule? And I've seen it a couple of times, but it's a weird one. I don't understand the functionality of that, but of taking someone out after they've given a disposal for a kind of get and go. But that's what happened to Rayner. So he got a big old corky and then a full body cramp, he was saying. In the post game, he spent a long time on post game Cam Rayner, which is good.
Yeah, he's a good chat though. Yeah, I mean, I love listening to Cam Rayner. His big goal from 60 odd out, very reminiscent of that goal he kicked against Richmond in that 2020 qualifying final as well. That was a really good, like a really good feeling when that happened because you know we've seen him do it before, and as soon as it left his boot, you're like, oh well, we know he can do this. Is he going to do it again in another big final? Yes, you bloody ripper.
Yeah, there's not much better than that. It was good to sort of just hit it on the fly. His snap from 45 metres that cleared the goal by a mile.
Yeah.
Like, that's so hard to do. And you hear it week in, week out. It's like, oh, you know, about 35 metres is a cutoff for a snap. And he just absolutely tailed it. He was a brute. You know, not great, like, not a great number of possessions. But at the same time, like, you know, we've been saying this. We're not a high possession team anymore. We're not really looking for you know, Lockie or whomever to kind of get 40 disposals. That's not sort of how we play. We're much quicker in the way we transition the ball and move the ball. But, you know, as far as a 16 possession game, like 16, 7 contested at a high efficiency, 3 goals, what more can you really want?
That's the Dugowie Petrarca style of footy. We all know he can play and we all want him to play. And, you know, finals is the time to do that. So week one, check. Yeah. Let's keep it going.
And it was. I'm really glad that Jasper Fletcher got like a lot of plaudits for what he did because I'm thinking, okay, so for a player in there, and you know, some must be said to Ollie Lord as well, who was playing like in his first final, in his sort of first handfuls of games. I think they both played maybe 12 and 13 or 12 and 14 games respectively. But like to kick that amount of goals, can you imagine one of the Dacos boys or like one of the other like darling first year players having kicked 3 goals in a final, the amount of just like combustion throughout the footy world there would have been had that happened from any kind of non-interstate club. It already felt like our game was tacked on at the end of the round, hardly spoken about. And it's like, that's the statement you need to sort of show that, hey, like, you're focused on all this Melbourne Victorian stuff. Like, there was a better game, the most fun game, and probably I think the highest skilled game for large parts that was on the Saturday night. Like, pay attention.
Well, hopefully we'll give people no choice. And, you know, we will have a Melbourne club coming up here in a couple of weeks' time, whether that's Carlton or Melbourne. So they're going to have to pay attention. And should we perform like that again? Yeah, you're going to have to take notice. I mean, a lot of people are saying that it's sort of more or less a formality as a Brisbane-Collingwood grand final at this stage. So Collingwood's definitely got the easier side of the draw. But we'll see. We'll see. As I said, there's a lot of water to go under the bridge yet.
Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting how there's almost like a Victorian side of the draw and then an interstate side of the draw. Because I was thinking about it and you go, like, for example, even for GWS, between round 24 and now, they've gone from Sydney to Melbourne, back to Sydney to Adelaide, and then prospectively back to Melbourne, back to Sydney, and back to Melbourne for a grand final.
Yeah.
Whereas Carlton have gone Melbourne, 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 Brisbane, Melbourne. To me, I get that they earned the right to have a home final, but it seems very odd. And Port Adelaide having to go from whatever, I'm not going to say a list of cities again, but yeah, like, I have no sympathy for the idea of, like, you know, people saying beforehand, like, oh, Collingwood don't get an advantage. You know, they're, you know, I think we talked about it the other week, but it's like their advantage is in the season. They've had to travel so little. Yeah. So, like, oh, boohoo, they didn't have to go, they didn't get a home final against another Vicky club. But, like, who gives a shit? You don't have to travel and you won't, you know, you don't have to leave Melbourne for the entire month. But it's like, yeah, I just think all bets are off when it comes to grand final day. Like, the MCG thing, it just doesn't really exist. It's not like a, it's a different thing altogether.
Yeah.
You know, I look forward to the idea, if it is a Collingwood Lions grand final, are they going to talk about the Lions MCG record, or are they going to talk about the fact that the Lions are 6 straight against Collingwood? What's your narrative?
Both are going to enable headlines and clicks. So take your pick. And then you've got 20 years to the day of Collingwood Brisbane in a grand final as well. So there's a lot of things you can chat about in that scenario. But yeah, let's just cool our jets a little bit here first.
If you've got a mate that loves the Lions, tell them to get the podcast into their ear holes.
We've had the JB, won by Lachie Neale.
Yes.
Congratulations. Cue some canned applause. I've made some changes to the paddy.
Sure.
I'm going a 5-4-3-2-1.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good, because I was struggling.
I'm going to sting you. And I it was only because there were players I couldn't get in. Yeah. And also because, I mean, you know, my votes do tend to mirror a lot of the coaches' votes. So I've got to give myself an elevated sense of self-worth, sure, or whatever. I don't know. So have you got a five, or do you want me to do my five?
No, I've got five now, I think. Yeah.
All right, well, hit me.
All right, so five for Klug.
Yep.
Four for Cammy Rayner.
Yep.
Three for Fletch.
You're nailing this, boy.
Two for Joe Dan.
Yeah.
And this is where I'm not going to nail it. I'm going to give one to Ollie Lord. 4 goals in his first final. Okay. Yeah.
I should have... Okay, can I change the rules and say, no, we're only doing Lions players just to get a full sample space?
Okay, in that case, one goes to Motti.
Okay. Well, we're quite similar because we've done the first four the same. I've given McKenna one.
Yeah. Yeah.
And cool. I wanted to make special mention because I saw just on Reddit, they do like a little tier list of performances, and McKenna was sort of just thrown in the mix. But I thought McKenna was really good. Like, he was really good. And it is really interesting. Like, I don't know, during the week, I watched the kind of the Richmond final from last year, and I've kind of just watched some old games against Port Adelaide and stuff like that. I didn't quite murder myself enough to watch the round one game in its entirety. I think I watched up to halftime when we might have been leading. I'm like, that's enough for me.
Yep.
But it's interesting to see that, like, sort of a lot of the new players, it's just new little additions and little, you know, whether it's been positional changes or the, you know, they've all been super important. And McKenna's definitely like front and center with that. McKenna, Wilmot, Coleman, just that back line, super dynamic. Yeah, really, really, really good.
Well, now's as good a time as any while we're on the subject of half backs. We spoke on the podcast last week about the retirement of Marcus Adams, and we sort of forecast any other potential retirements. And we did say, you know, yeah, we'll expect Daniel Rich. And then no sooner did I put the podcast episode out, Daniel Rich is in front of the group. you know, shedding
tears. I love the level of false advertising he had of putting him in the thumbnail as well. That was that is peak.
Yeah,
but you I could have had Marcus Adams.
Yeah. Obviously, this is probably news we did see coming, and yeah, shattering. Obviously, you know, what was it, number three on the all-time Brisbane Lions games or something? Three or four, which means that it goes black, and then two number 10s in Ashcroft and Richie. So he was my favourite player for a long, long time. A long time, Daniel Rich. And as I put on our Twitter, someone, some good lad on Reddit doing God's work uploaded every goal from outside 50 of Daniel Rich's. It turns into about a 19-minute video, and I've sat through it about three times now. It's better than
mine. I haven't had the chance to watch it yet, but I have seen it and I have earmarked it. I was just like, yeah, I'm like, that one's going to be immortalized, and I'll have to download that and then put it back up on YouTube or something. So we'll see how we go. Even just in an unlisted video for those who want it.
There's a lot of erotic videos on the internet, I hear. That is by far the most erotic.
Yeah. Long and strong.
Big time. All right, here's a hypothetical scenario for you. Grand final day, we make it, and we've put JL as the sub for our qualifying and prelim. Is Fags tempted? Are you tempted to get a bit romantic and give Daniel Rich the sub vest? Have him play in the guts for the last quarter or whatever?
No. I think you just keep things going as they are.
Yeah.
I've been very critical of JL, and I still don't quite get him as a sub, but it seems to be working. And I'm just... Yeah, at least he knows what he's supposed to be doing, allegedly, JL. Whereas I think you bring someone in... I think it probably, I don't know, like, it might speak a little bit more to the lack of it being a team thing, but I definitely think that something will probably change regarding the team and the 22 or 23 that are on the ground in terms of getting a medal, because I don't think that it is attributed to those players.
I hate to agree with you. I love the idea of him coming on as a sub and, like, the idea of the crowd as he, you know, takes the vest off and comes on in the last quarter, providing we're, you know, 40 points in front or something.
Yeah. Well, if someone's got a time machine and they can forecast the fact that we'll be like six goals ahead with the last, like, yeah, but you know, what happens if, like, I don't know, Lachie Neale goes down in the first quarter and then you're like, okay, well, you wheel Richie out.
Yeah. No, I get it. It's just it's a risk. And if Melbourne didn't do it for Nathan Jones, then I don't see us doing it for Daniel Rich. As much as I would bloody love that, unfortunately, I don't. And you never know. Maybe McKenna and Coleman both get injured in the prelim.
Let's not tempt fate.
Okay.
Let's keep on the what, like, the interview that he gave. I didn't see him announce it to the team. I haven't seen that video, but I saw his interview, and he doesn't seem bitter. Like, he seems sad that he, like, more upset in himself that he's just sort of, his body has let him down, but he doesn't seem bitter about it. So
I think he's probably had enough time to wrap his head around the situation and come to terms with it probably as well. So it sort of feels that way. But his announcement to the team is a real tearjerker. It's like a 6.5-minute video of him in front of the team with his wife and kids there and stuff. It's yeah. You got to get the tissues out for that one as well.
I don't know if I've got that one for a Monday morning. Jeez.
Yeah. Obviously, just, you know, what can you say about Daniel Rich that hasn't already been said over the last couple of months? Like, he's had that many opportunities to go home back to West Australia over the years and stuck around through the blurst of times and.
I do think he was a bit unlucky as well with the timing, because he announced it, what was it, the Tuesday night or the Monday?
Monday night, because the podcast had just gone out.
But it was like he got no coverage on any show.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm sorry, but Daniel Rich has been a more influential player in the AFL than Jack Zeebel. I know Jack Zeebel played a lot of games and stuff like that, but, like, yeah, like, I hope he gets a bit of recognition, to be honest, from the wider footy community, because I don't think you'll find almost anyone who's as not disliked, if that makes sense. Like, there's no one that sort of, no one hated him. No one thought he was like a grub. No one, everyone loves seeing people just absolutely roost the hell out of the ball. And to be probably one of the more consistent best kicks in the comp for a long time, people love that sort of thing. So I don't know. It's, he's almost like the ultimate club man for the Lions. And like, it almost says more than Black and Ashcroft that like he wasn't really successful.
No, I agree. Sort of might fall into that Nick Riewoldt, Matty Pavlich category of, you know, ultimate clubman doing everything they could without walking away with the ultimate prize. Different scenarios, obviously, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost more valuable. Maybe Pavlich is a similar one, but more, you know, for interstate clubs, it's more valuable to have that level of solidity to them. He got some personal accolades, like really good to have an All-Australian, but he easily could have played in that West Coast flag in 18.
Yeah, for sure.
And probably, I'm sure there would have been a lot of clubs that were a lot of suitors. It is a little bit unfortunate that sort of almost as soon as he was an All-Australian, the game kind of moved past his style of halfback, which was a bit of a shame. It was a shame because it's just he needed to be more athletic in a time where he wasn't able to be. So, and I think it's late enough in his career that he wasn't able to facilitate any other kind of change. Position wise, I mean, imagine him roaming around in the forward 50 or something like that. But yeah, there are not too many that have been better to the Brisbane Lions than him.
100%. I mean, we could do a whole podcast on Daniel Rich, should we want to? But he'd had a decent game in the VFL, and most importantly, his hamstring held up. So you know, he's doing everything he can to be available. Should he get the call up? The twos, my God, a frustrating game to watch. I don't know if you caught any of it, but here's the three-quarter time score, 8 goals, 15.
Lovely.
Yeah, so, and that is, yeah, it was pretty symptomatic of the game. It was like 2 goals, 7 at quarter time, 5 goals, 12 at half time, 8 goals, 15 at three-quarter time, just keeping Williamstown in it before, corrected it somewhat, kicked 4 goals, 1 in the last quarter to walk away with a 40-point win. So they're on to a prelim. They will be taking on, it'll be an away game, Werribee. So we'll be taking on Werribee in a prelim.
Oh, my bloody local boys, eh? Well, looks like I have something to do on the weekend.
Looks like you do.
Werribee's about 15 minutes from me, so.
Laughing.
Is it the Werribee Lions? Like, is it, who are we? The Lions. Who are we going to beat? The Lions. Like, yay.
I think it could just be the Werribee Football Club, if I'm honest.
Ooh, oh, no,
Werribee Tigers.
Okay. Who are we? Tigers. Who are we going to beat? The Tigers.
Like the show? Make sure to follow and subscribe on your favorite podcast platforms.
How would you feel about doing a little wrap-up of the other games in the league with their mighty scores of 60 to 53 and 74 to 68?
I can tell
and
how
another
you,
one
I
can that broke a hundy.
Tell how you feel about it. Yeah, look, Collingwood Melbourne, all the damage was done in the first quarter where Collingwood put on 4 or 5 goals and then it was just an arm wrestle for the remainder of the game. It looked like Melbourne was going to potentially pinch it there towards the end, but Collingwood had, yeah, just sort of held on. Sydney Carlton, Blake Akers single-handedly got them over the line there with a couple of clutch touches on the goal line and the goal to seal it. And then GWS St Kilda was about what I imagined it to be, although a bit more high-scoring. It's only the second time someone's put 100 points on St Kilda, so Giants are looking good and every chance to put Port Adelaide out in straight sets.
Yeah, I definitely was sitting there going like, oh, I would not really want to play GWS next week. I was getting some 2019 flashbacks. I'm like, oh, Brisbane and GWS in a
semi-final.
In a qualifying final to a semi-final to play Collingwood. We've been here before.
Yep.
Like, so yeah, less of GWS. Yeah, weird games, you know, got to say the Collingwood-Melbourne one, like not a great game to watch. I understand the you know, the appeal of finals footy and that high pressure thing, but just like a lack of quality, a lack of decision making. Yeah, Carlton-Sydney, bit of a weird game. Sydney was seemingly trying their best to not win it, as was Harry Mackay. Yeah, not much to say about St Kilda and GWS. They're just, I kind of about three quarters of watching that. Like, not that I watched three quarters. I was not paying the most attention because it just wasn't, like, that game felt the least like a final out of all of them. So yeah, some standout performances. I thought, although Walsh was given kind of plaudits in the Carlton game, I thought that Chera was very good. He's kind of reminding me a little bit of like prime Dane Beams, which is a bit of a weird one. Got kind of a bit of overhead capability, seems a bit more solid. I thought the Lizard was really good. Melbourne, I don't know. Well, Gawn was good, obviously, but like
for a long period of that game, it looked like Gawn was the only one trying to dig in for Melbourne there. Petrarca ended up putting together a fairly decent game, but he just didn't seem to be there when the moments mattered, I guess, and Gawn was. And Viney, yeah, he saves his best footy for playing Brisbane, evidently.
Yeah, bit of a weird one, you know, kind of looking and going like...
Taylor Adams. Taylor Adams.
Where's the scoring power coming from?
Like, well, that's the question.
Both of these teams.
That's been Melbourne's question. And now with Melksham out, that sort of takes away part of it. Petty obviously added that lineup as well. And now they're going to be without Van Rooyen for a week, which I thought was bloody lucky when you purposely lift your elbow and clip someone in the jaw to only get 1 week. You're doing all right. So, McDonald came in. They've got options in Brown or Grundy. You know, players they've played.
They probably have to go Grundy. Like, Grundy and Tom McDonald. Like, Tom McDonald looked like he was walking through molasses in that game. Even Stephen May looked a step off the pace. Like, Melbourne just looked... They looked like they'd had a bad night's sleep or something like that. It was uncharacteristic, but I didn't not like it, I got to say.
Look, he's just hoping they bash each other up next week. Them and Carlton just go...
Well, they try. You know, they definitely tried in that first quarter. It was a spicy affair. I was enjoying the amount of weird slips that were like, "Oh, how's your groin? How's your knee? How's your ankle?"
Yep.
Then the big talking point, which is the Braden Maynard and
Angus Brayshaw, and it looks like
Angus Brayshaw.
All the news coming out of Melbourne sounds like Angus Brayshaw is not well, and I mean, he's obviously going to be missing a week, but early calls is he's missing at least two. From his condition, but you never know, that could change in 2 weeks' time, so there's no point ruminating about that. But he's obviously got a history with concussion as it is, and big knock from Bruzzy Maynard for me.
Where does it sit with you? Yeah,
that's an accident for me. It's an unfortunate accident, and obviously a poor bloke's been left knocked out, but I don't know what much more he could have done. To be fair, he jumped to smother the ball, came down, landed on him. It's an accident, and
yeah,
it's Braden Maynard, so I want to give him weeks because can't stand the bloke.
I do like the fact that no one said he's not that sort of player. No one said it.
Yeah.
And because that is sort of the quintessential thing to say. He's not that sort of player, but everyone knows he is.
Well, he came out at the start of the game saying he's going to intimidate. So, he is that sort of player. And to be fair, I really like the way Braden Maynard plays. He's very Mitch Robinson. Like, he'll do anything for the team. He'll put his body on the line time and time again. But other than that, very few redeemable qualities about the fella.
Yeah, well, I mean, I looked at it and I had a bit of chatter with my brothers, and I sort of said, he'll get 3 weeks and get sent to tribunal, and it'll be a massive shit fire at the tribunal. And they were, they were sort of like, oh, but it was just a smother. And I'm like, yeah, but the way that the contact works and it, there's a category, it's unintentional high contact, and it was either going to be high or severe. So it's going to be 3 weeks. It's interesting because I don't think that it should be a suspension, but I can entirely understand if it is.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think it should be. I think that's a Football Act accidental.
It's a Football Act, but to argue in the side of it being a suspension, he's put himself in that position. Like, he's put himself in a position where he then can protect himself and Brayshaw can't. So, like, I don't know. I think that's possibly the most exuberant smother I've possibly ever seen since, is it Brad Scott or Chris Scott in one of the grand finals?
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, to me, I can see it going both ways, but it will be a big one or it will be nothing. That's the reality of it. It can't be a one or a two-weeker. But not intentional, definitely not intentional. But also, come down and give the guy look after yourself. Like, we know I'm an advocate of, I think players should be looking after themselves more than what they are in terms of the player with the ball or the player getting tackled or whatever, going into contests, things like that. But kicking the ball is something that you can't really protect yourself. And everyone knows if you hit a guy after he hits the ball, it's basically a 50-meter penalty.
Yeah.
Because you're getting a downfield free kick. So it's something that you don't expect. So Brayshaw shouldn't really be expecting contact there. And just, I don't know, the tuck of the shoulder, I don't agree with the whole, well, if he comes down open, they're going to have a head clash and they're both going to be like, no, not really. Like, you can do this.
Yeah.
I'm covering my face with my hands. You can do that to protect yourself, but he went up there and I think he was like, well, I can put some body on here. So I can see him getting weeks.
Well, we'll find out. Hopefully it doesn't bloody draw out the same way that Toby Bedford thing did, because that was ridiculous.
That was a disgrace. Yeah. But and I'm glad Toby Bedford got off.
Yeah, I'm glad he got to play in the end as well. So, and there is precedent. I mean, well, I can't remember if it was at the start of this year or like last year, the Tom Lynch one, where he was going in for a marking contest at the last moment, changed his angle of his body, got suspended initially, got overturned. So maybe they'll draw on that.
Similar also to the McCartan one as well against Adelaide. And I'd also throw the Patrick Cripps one in from last year against Cal Archie, where you're going in to do a footy act and you're hitting someone. But I think the tuck of the shoulder is kind of, the more I see it, the more I'm like, oh, he could be in trouble here. But I think he should play. I don't think Jack Martin should play.
And he won't. They'll argue it. They'll try and argue it down to at least one. But, yeah, 2 weeks for...
Because that is an absolute peanut thing to do. Like a swinging arm.
Yeah.
Like, and, you know, oh, it was against Sydney's one of their most influential players. Like, come on. Move on.
Yeah.
I don't think he'll play. Van Rooyen's obviously not going to be there. Simon Goodwin, what a knob. To have an absolute detailed account of the Maynard and Brayshaw one and then not have seen the Van Rooyen one is just like, could you be, like, I know he's South Australian, but could he be any more Melbourne?
I mean, like, I get it. You've got to have your players back, so you've got to defend them. But yeah, that was, I think if he had his time over again, he'd obviously just come out of the rooms after seeing Angus Brayshaw in a world of hurt, and emotion got the better of him when he started spitting his mouth there, but... Yeah, that was pretty stupid from Simon Goodwin. I can't stand Simon Goodwin.
I don't understand where, you know, I get that it's kind of a bit of a thing. People saying, oh, I didn't see it. Like, why can we not say, I don't want to talk about that. I've been advised not to talk about that. Like, why, like, is that wrong? Does that make you come off worse? Like, I feel like you should be able to say that rather than just lie.
Yeah, and say, I guess, didn't see it. Yeah, but I guess the thing is, we all know they're lying, but you have to take it at face value. If you say, oh, I'm not going to talk about that, maybe it implies some sort of guilt one way or the other, or it's just, I guess it's just easier.
Yeah, I feel like if that becomes a thing that people say, then it doesn't come with any inherent level of guilt or dishonesty, whereas the, or didn't sue that, it's like, come on. Come on.
Yeah.
Rightio.
Yeah.
Come on, Vossi. Come on, Goodwin. Like, you didn't see you guys, like, just headhunting.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Oh, dear.
Make sure you follow us on socials. Just search for BL Fancast.
We'll save any previews because we don't know exactly who we're previewing yet. Gut says it'll be Melbourne. I think Carlton played their grand final on Friday night, to be fair. So, Gut says it'll be Melbourne. But there's no point previewing anything just yet, so we will do another episode next week where we do that.
Can we commission to get... like 60,000 exercise bikes out the Gabba just to pedal power in case we have a power outage against Melbourne. Like,
I think
put a big screen up. Like,
I think, you know, someone within both the Brisbane and whoever football club will be asking the question of local council and, you know, energy companies. So we're good to go, right? I just want to make sure that there's absolutely no chance of the lights going out in this one, because imagine that.
I reckon I'd turn it off just as a joke at the exact same time.
There's
don't do that. If there's an insider listening, don't do that. But like, there'd be a part of me that wouldn't be able to just like not pull the big plug out and be like, no. But we don't want that to happen because we saw what happened where they kicked a billion goals and made themselves look a hell of a lot better than what they were, because they were down by what, a million points, and then not too good that. About a 40-point lead, wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that. Hey, just quickly, the women, they managed to topple Port Adelaide by 50 points down at Alberton Oval. Ali Anderson, 36 touches, a fantastic game, broke her PBs. Dax Davidson kicked 4 goals. Conway had a great game in her 50th, as did Belle Dawes, 21 touches. And Kathy Svark as well, obviously another huge game. So that's the women for, you know, a very, very, very brief touch on the AFLW. you know, once the men's season wraps up, we'll probably get into that a little bit more. I mean, I will anyway, because I'll be keeping a closer eye on it than you will. But yeah, it's all to be had in front of us. A prelim on the way. Fantastic stuff. I don't know if I should say this out loud, but I have booked flights to Melbourne.
No.
Okay, never mind. Don't
say it. Cut that. Didn't happen.
Yeah, it's exciting stuff. Those, you know, Lions members listening will know that the grand final ticket ballot goes out on Wednesday, I think, for members. So I'm sure the Ticketmaster website will be inundated with Lions members at that stage, as will be.
Won't be an inundation since the floods in 2011 or whatever it was. We here at this podcast will be trying to get tickets.
Oh, yeah.
Should we not, and there are any listeners out there, don't shell us, but we will take any spares if anyone gets them. So
there's probably not a figure I wouldn't pay, to be honest.
I'm pretty poor, so...
I'm pretty poor as well, but I'll find a way.
I'm happy to give mucho shout-outs and, I don't know, probably run around like a goose.
Just before we do head off, obviously there are two semi-finals this weekend. Melbourne Carlton at the MCG on the Friday night, and Port Adelaide GWS at Adelaide Oval Saturday night. I'm going for Melbourne and GWS.
Fair enough. I'm going Melbourne and Port.
Yeah, I think Port should probably rally, but I think I just like the idea of Port going out in straight sets.
Yeah, I mean, I like the idea of Melbourne going out for back-to-back straight setters, but also I just don't think it's going to happen. Yeah, we didn't actually touch on the Port injury thing, but who gives a shit about that? It's not important. They were done anyway.
Yeah. Whatever happens, as long as Melbourne and Carlton bloody bash each other up, that'll be the ideal result.
Excellent stuff.
All right, well, as you know, as Lions fans, prelim awaits. How bloody exciting. As the players and coaches have said, this is our time. We've never had a better shot. As the media's said as well. Like, everyone is saying it. We've never had a better shot. And, you know, we've already made the most of it so far with a resounding win in the qualifying final, so... let's keep going.
But I do want to leave you on one thing. You little beauty!